This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, the betting splits are up always. I'm the president over at VSiN.com. Money and bets for every game, updated every 10 minutes, straight from DraftKings, today's games and future events as well. Make sure you check out, use those betting splits to your advantage during the football season, especially part of your arsenal. VSiN.com to check out the betting splits. We got you back here. Sharp Money. Week one, of course, right around the corner. Got games coming up Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher. We were just talking about the decision. Okay. We were just talking about the decision. Ryan Day going to go with Kyle McCord over Devin Brown to start for Ohio State as that discussion loomed into this morning. I think the perfect person to talk about quarterback battles would be Max Brown. Remember, Max Brown couldn't find a bigger recruit, five-star kid, number one quarterback in the 2013 class, USC, Pittsburgh quarterback as well. Tremendous player, great broadcaster now, Pac-12 network analyst, former USC quarterback. You can find Max on Twitter at MaxBrown4. And as we say hi to Max, Max, you are the perfect person to talk about this, okay? It's going to be Kyle McCord at Ohio State, but Devin Brown is going to get playing time as well. It's kind of a dangerous game, oftentimes, that coaches play where they promise something along the recruiting trail, and then the game start, you have to deliver. You want to talk about splitting time with your teammates here in the quarterback situation at Ohio State?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, fellas. And
thank you.
Makes me feel a little old. I'm, what, six years removed from playing, and I remember training with Devin Brown when he was in elementary school out here west. So crazy. Wow. That he's now front and center for the college football world to see. But, yeah, I mean, as from a quarterback perspective, splitting time sucks. I did that in college a couple times, and I don't care what you say as a coach. I think it leads to quarterbacks feeling like they're playing with a short leash, feeling like they need to hit every home run shot. And I think it's a fine line between a quarterback that, hey, if I know I'm only playing in the first quarter and at the end of the first quarter I get my one shot play called and I know I try to force it rather than hitting the check down. It's always a fine line right there. And it's obviously on the quarterback to play within himself. But it's a delicate balance. I would imagine a school like Ohio State didn't necessarily need to promise anything on the recruiting trail. I would imagine they're given the "we're going to play the best guy" type of speech, and I'm sure that will ultimately play itself out here in Ohio State's case, hopefully in the first half of football.
Max, you're a big-time recruit. For people that don't know, you won the Gatorade Player of the Year twice in the state of Washington. When you were being recruited by the biggest schools in the country, was there any school that came to you and said, hey, listen, we're going to give you an opportunity, whether it be as a freshman or we're eventually going to promise you potential playing time? What is it like? Take people through the process that may not be familiar with what kind of goes on the recruiting trail and then where coaches wind up in a difficult situation, currently what we're discussing at Ohio State.
Yeah, it's a good question. For me, I think most coaches probably got the vibe really early with me that I was, you know, I was pretty locked in and not a straight arrow, but I wasn't in it with for the games or some of the money or all the stuff you hear about sometimes with five-star quarterbacks. That wasn't necessarily my vibe. I knew I wanted to play in an elite program, and for me it came down to Alabama, Oklahoma, and USC. And at that case, with all three of those schools, I mean, they're not in the business of promising recruits anything, at least in my experience, because they're good enough, and especially those schools with the rich quarterback tradition that they had. In fact, it was kind of the opposite for me. When Lane Kiffin offered me at USC, he said, "Max, we're offering you and one other guy. First guy to take it, first guy to take the scholarship, he's going to be our dude." So it was kind of putting the pressure back on me rather than them feeling like they owe me something. And I guess that's the luxury of a school like USC. But I think it gets interesting when you talk about those schools that are maybe lower level D1 schools or mid-tier D1 schools, when you're trying to poach the hometown kid. Like, I mean, for me, this didn't happen in my case, but I was a Seattle guy. I remember Mike Leach at Washington State. I never really gave Washington State serious consideration, but that's the type of dynamic that maybe you start promising things and you can get yourself in a unique position. And I will say nowadays, the NIL component and guys getting legitimate money, you're seeing that a little bit at ASU and UCLA with both those young quarterbacks playing, I don't know this to be the case, but you always got to be thinking, hey, is part of the reason they're playing because some NIL booster in the background knows that, hey, I want to see my investment get on the field. I think that there's a lot of truth to that in today's college football.
Tremendous information, inside look at the recruiting trail in college football. Max Brown joins us here on Sharp Money, Pac-12 network analyst, of course, a former quarterback, Max Brown, four. Okay, let's talk about USC. What did we learn? What can we take away from the win over San Jose State?
Yeah, to be honest, guys, I don't know that I learned a lot. I mean, I learned Zachariah Branch is a stud, but those that have been following the program closely, we kind of knew that was only a matter of time. I guess I didn't expect it to pop necessarily week one, but we knew behind the scenes he was a beast. But I say that we didn't learn a ton because I walk away with some of the same questions defensively. I think I felt the depth more at USC, but it's hard to tell if, hey, some giving up 28 points, is that a byproduct of San Jose State having a good quarterback or some of the deficiencies we saw last year from USC? And then offensively for USC, there's still a lot up in the air at some of those position groups. They started five different offensive line combos before getting into the reserves at the end of the game. I'd expect there to be a tighter rotation in the weeks ahead. And then at receiver, you had nearly like 10 guys catch a pass. And I don't think this is going to be a year for USC where there's a true receiver one. But we know Caleb's special. That's nothing new. And I think there's a world where we don't necessarily see the true USC for about a month from now because the schedule is pretty light on the front end and heavy at the end of the year facing Notre Dame, Washington, and Utah at 3 out of 4 weeks.
You know, Max, you brought up a really good point there that the Trojan schedule doesn't get difficult until October 14th, game number 7 for USC at Notre Dame. Does this benefit them in the sense that they continue to ascend into the rankings, potentially get highest number 2 or 3 or somewhere in that range, and then with a loss, because it won't drop them so far at that point in time, they could be a potential one-loss team that gets into the playoff just based on the way the schedule plays out?
That's a good point. Hadn't thought about that in terms of timing. I think there's definitely truth to that. I go back and forth. I can make an argument for both ways, that USC's schedule is extremely advantageous, given that it's more backloaded, like you said. But I also lean, and I think nowadays, I lean more towards, I actually have a little bit more concern with the schedule. And the reason being is USC's bye comes in their week 4, the rest of the world's week 3, because USC played in week 0. That's a really early bye, and they're going to have to rattle off 9 straight games. That's a lot of college football without a break. And I also think from a psychological perspective, having it be a weak front end and then a back, I mean, like I said, you have in Washington, Utah, Notre Dame, 3 out of 4 weeks where it's very physical. I could see a world where maybe USC gets a little comfortable early on in the season and then gets punched in the mouth by Utah and Washington. Not that they're going to sneak up on USC, but it's just a different style of football that I think USC really needs to be wary of. Maybe some of the pitfalls there as we get into mid and late October of a schedule that was somewhat of a cupcake early on and then gears up quickly towards the back of the season.
Okay, Max, the Pac-12 is loaded. Time for Max Brown's power rankings. Give me the top 3 teams in the Pac-12.
Top 3 teams in the Pac-12. I got USC 1, I got Washington 2, and Utah 3. I think all those teams can make a legitimate case for why they should be the favorite to win the conference. I think USC's depth is the difference maker for me. I think this is the deepest the roster's been really since the Pete Carroll days. And as we get late into the season, that makes me optimistic, along with the fact they have the Heisman Trophy winner. But I just got off Salt Lake City radio, and it's a Utah roster that returns a ton of production. But Cam Rising's health's a big question. And then Washington, interested to see where their secondary's at. That, to me, was their Achilles heel a year ago. If that group's at least solid, I think that defense could be a lot better to support a Michael Penix-led offense.
You answered, actually, my next question about the Huskies' defense, but just talk to us real quick about Penix. How good can he be? Can he get to New York City as a Heisman guy?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. I think I put him, my quarterback tiers out west, or Caleb Williams at tier 1 by himself, and then Michael Penix at tier 2 by himself, ahead of Bo Nix, ahead of Cam Rising, ahead of guys like Shedeur Sanders and DJ Uiagalelei and Cam Ward, of course. he's that good. Extremely productive last year, nation's leading passer. Very interested to see from a confidence perspective. See, last year he was named the starter in mid-August. He had to go through a quote-unquote quarterback battle. I think we all thought he was going to be the guy, but it wasn't necessarily clear. Now he's had a whole offseason of being the dude. This is his team, a year of being healthy. How does that work for his confidence? Can he unlock another level to his game, especially with his legs? That's what I'm intrigued to see. I think he could find himself with another productive year being right in the thick of a first-round NFL quarterback type of conversation.
Just what we needed. That was tremendous. Max Brown, Pac-12 Network analyst. Great job, Max. We'll talk to you during the season. Thank you.
Appreciate you guys. Talk soon.
Thank you.
Tremendous. Wow. At Max Brown 4. Got a big future. Michigan, you're next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Sharp Money, VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher. And as we welcome you back, of course, week zero rear view, but here comes week one college football to discuss. We bring in Kyle Hunter. You can find Kyle Hunter on Twitter at Kyle Hunter Picks. Does a great job talking college football. Big fan of his work. And we say hi to Kyle. Hi, Kyle. How are you?
I'm great, guys. Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah, thank you for joining. We're going to get to a bunch here, including you asked a question to your Twitter followers, your favorite single season win total college football play of the year. I want to ask you the same question, but first, tell us, you got a really cool free college football pick'em contest going on.
Yeah, I got a cool free contest here this year. ATS plays, you pick 10 per week for the entire regular season. You get one week that's a money ball, so it counts twice. You know, details and links to this contest are my pinned post over at Twitter or X at Kyle Hunter Picks. Up to $500 for first place, $150 per second, depending on how many signups there are. $450 a minimum in cash, regardless of signups. No strings attached, nothing wrong with that, just for fun. So I'm looking forward to that this season.
Yeah, go get involved. Kyle Hunter Picks. You can sign up for free. Okay, now I'll ask you, Kyle, your favorite single season win total in college football this year. Let's start there.
Well, I'll tell you, some of these have moved. So I think my favorite, UTSA over 7.5. I know that's a little difficult to get at this point. I do like over 8. I think the Roadrunners are undervalued. I'll give you one that I know hasn't moved off that number as well, too. I like Penn State over 9.5. I think the Nittany Lions are a bit undervalued by some people and will likely win one of those two games against Ohio State or Michigan.
Yeah, let's stay on that play there for Penn State over 9.5, Kyle. To me, I look at the schedule, even if they drop both games to Ohio State and Michigan, I don't see much of a scenario where they lose to the other anybody else in the other 10 games. Do you see anybody that's a legitimate challenger against them outside of Michigan and Ohio State?
Well, they're going to be a significant favorite in every other game. So obviously anything can happen in college football, but I think that they have a really good shot at winning all the rest of their other games. So the way I look at it is they have a over 50% chance of winning one of those two games against Michigan or Ohio State. And then you got that buffer. So I do like Penn State. I think their defense is much better than people realize. The secondary is excellent every single year. The front seven is even better this year. So I think Penn State could really make some noise. I think, you know, their odds are probably a bit too long even to win the Big Ten.
Kyle, Nebraska, Minnesota coming up Thursday night. Yesterday we sat here. It was Minnesota pretty much everywhere, 7.5. The hook is gone. It's now Minnesota hosting Nebraska 7. Where are you on this one?
So I think the question is, how much of an upgrade do you think it is when Matt Rhule takes over at Nebraska? It has to be an upgrade. We know that. The question is how much. Rhule has been great as an underdog, 32-15 against the spread as an underdog with an average ATS margin of plus 5.02 points. So he's done great in this role. It's first game for them, certainly. I think there are some question marks about Minnesota. They lost quite a bit of talent from last year. Rossi's a defensive wizard, so he usually does a great job with that defense no matter what. I would expect Minnesota to still run the football a lot. They're a very run-heavy, slow-paced team. The wind could be an issue in this game. I see 18 miles per hour sustained winds, gusts as high as 30 miles per hour. Clear positive for the under. I like the under the best in this one. If I had to bet a side, I would lean toward Nebraska at the points. I think there's, getting a full touchdown, I definitely prefer it with the hook, but getting a full touchdown with a game with this low of a total, is definitely the way I would lean. Certainly Nebraska has question marks as well. Their defense is not great. They do have pretty good depth in the secondary, and I like Tony White taking over. I think that 3-3-5 will help out.
Oregon State plays San Jose State on Sunday. Two-part question here. Tell us a little bit about how you break this game down. And then the second question is, a team having played the previous Saturday compared to other teams that have not played, we saw six games over the weekend or seven games last weekend. How much of an advantage is that potentially going into this, what is officially week one?
Yeah, I think it's an advantage, but some people overstate how big the advantage is the way I would say it. San Jose State's a good team as far as well-coached. Brent Brennan, I give them a pass for last year's tough finish. They had the tragedy in the middle of the season with the player passing away. Certainly a very good coach. In this game, the question mark is, can San Jose State stop the Oregon State run? Because Oregon State wants to run the football. They have a great offensive line, very underrated by most people. Jonathan Smith has covered against the spread very well, 28-12 against the spread in his last 40 games. Now, the problem with this is, and you guys know, you start covering this many spreads, almost like a point spread tax. It's going to be tough to bet this team laying that many points. As San Jose State loses 56-28 last week, they gained 6.0 yards per play in that one. So was that more about San Jose State's offense being good or USC still having trouble on defense? You know, time will tell on that. I do think Cordero is a solid quarterback, though. Nick Nash turned into a nice receiver. He had three touchdowns in that game. Oregon State's defense was good last year. Spates is a big loss for them. They lost a lot from the secondary. I think Oregon State runs the football pretty easily in this game with Fenwick and Martinez. Big day for them. I think both teams have improved offensively and gotten worse defensively. I like the over in this game.
Like that call there. Patrick, one of the things I like that Kyle mentioned is the offensive line for Oregon State. I think outside of Georgia, you can make the argument this offensive line is almost as good as anyone in college football. But with Uiagalelei under center, Patrick, I think you're going to see a lot of opportunities on third and short and fourth and short for this offense to continue to sustain drives because of his size and pushing behind that O-line. We saw them do that with the tight end last year, lining up in the H-back position.
Yeah, Oregon State's going to be a badass this year. Let's stick with the Pac-12. Kyle Hunter picks on Twitter. It's a must-follow if you like college football and betting it. Who do you like in the Pac-12? I'll ask you the same question we asked Max Brown. Give me your top three, your power rankings for the Pac-12.
Oh, geez. I mean, Pac-12-wise, you have to put USC up there. This Pac-12 is very interesting this year. I think UCLA is a sleeper team. Certainly not a team I rank as high, but I would put USC first in the Pac-12. Second, I have Washington. So Pac-12-wise, I have Washington second, Utah third. Now, Utah would be second, but I don't know about the status of Cam Rising. Kyle Whittingham's an excellent coach, a guy I like to back way more than I like to fade. The problem is Kyle Whittingham's not really going to give too much information about Rising's ability or status at this point. I can't really blame them.
When you look at the USC team, how good do you think this defense can be, and what can we take away from week one that we can maybe apply to the rest of the season, if anything?
Man, I tell you, it should be better. On paper, it should definitely be far better than last year. I don't love what I saw last week because it wasn't just San Jose State moving the football in garbage time. You know, San Jose State was moving the ball well right from the beginning of that game. Scheme-wise, it seems like they're a bit too plain there at USC, and I know Grinch gets a lot of grief, and I can kind of understand that at this point. So we'll see what they do scheme-wise to see if they can switch it up, help things out, because the talent they have is far better than what they've shown on the field.
I'll ask you the same question, Kyle, about Notre Dame. You know, they play that three-game stretch is going to be brutal later in the season. But what you saw from Notre Dame, again, it's against Navy, weird system. But what did you take from Notre Dame moving forward?
Well, it's hard to not like Notre Dame after what you saw there, right? I mean, that was a tremendous performance. I think Hartman is such a big upgrade over what they've had the past few years at quarterback. I think especially Drew Pine really was not very good last year. This Notre Dame system on offense is going to be far more scary with a downfield passing threat. They don't have great wide receivers, which I think could show itself in some of their bigger games more. You know, against Navy, you don't really need that big playmaker on the outside. But I do think Notre Dame, I like their direction as a team. I think Marcus Freeman's a good coach. He'll do a good job recruiting. So, Notre Dame's a team that I would like to bet as an underdog. You know, they'll be a dog at least a couple times here.
Kyle, before you came on, we were talking about potential national champions. Give us some teams that you think legitimately can win the national title this year.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question because most years there's only, you know, four or five, six teams that you think really have a legit chance. I don't like betting those favorites and things like that. You know, I don't want to lock up my money in a long term for a future. Now, as far as ones that I actually think have a legit chance, obviously Georgia is the favorite for a reason. I hate to go against a team like Alabama when everybody's doubting them. A team that I think could do it that is not rated as highly by some people is Texas. And I'll tell you what, you know, I almost have to duck when I say Texas because we've bought into Texas several years in a row, and Texas has not been back, as people would say. I think they're Texas, but they can't have a really good run this year. When are they going to do it? You know, this is a team that has no real weaknesses. I could see a team like Texas sneaking in there into the playoffs and having a shot. Also could see Penn State, like we said earlier, as another team that could have a shot.
Okay. Now, you mentioned, I want to get to another bet that you have here on your sheet. We're talking to Kyle Hunter. Kyle Hunter picks on Twitter. NC State UConn coming up Thursday. Looks like UConn's catching 14.5 hosting NC State.
Yeah, this is a really fantastic game, in my opinion. Yeah, UConn's going to try to pack up the house pretty good for this one. Brennan Armstrong comes over for NC State. Armstrong had a terrible year last year. I think that was far more about Virginia and Tony Elliott than it was about Brennan Armstrong. The NC State defense did lose a lot from last year. I think they're still a pretty good unit. I think UConn might have found a decent quarterback there in Fagnano, the transfer. So I know UConn has a really good ground game. It's underrated how well their offensive line played last year. Teams knew they couldn't throw last year. They still averaged 4.73 yards per carry. I think they stall this game, try to make it as few possessions as they possibly can. I would be looking toward UConn plus the points here in this game.
Okay, Kyle, great job. It's great to talk to you. We'll talk to you during the regular season as well. Now, remember, if you want to get involved in the free college football pick'em contest, it's easy to find. It's pinned at the top at Kyle Hunter Picks. Thank you, Kyle. Great job. Appreciate you.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, there you go. Kyle Hunter, good get by the big guy. I believe Kyle, I don't know if Kyle, you met Kyle on Friday night on your wild excursion at Circa. No, he's smiling. He's not.
He's a respectable person. He does not.
I know he did. You did some networking that night. So we're going to have somebody named Svetlana talking about Michigan football coming up next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
The updated NFL betting guide will be released this Thursday. Throughout the NFL preseason, the VSIN experts have been reevaluating every team to give you the betting edge. Our updated NFL betting guide will have picks from every on-air host, including Dustin Sweetelson. Team-specific preseason analysis. Smile, big guy. How to use the VSIN betting splits and football contest strategies. If you want the best and most comprehensive collection of picks, predictions, and previews, look, you can start for $19. I would encourage you to get over there and do the yearly through the Super Bowl for 50% off. Okay, it's vsin.com/subscribe. That's vsin.com/subscribe. Okay, we do have a starter in Columbus. Ohio State has announced that Kyle McCord is going to start, though, as Ryan Day said, Devin Brown will play against Indiana. Let's unpack this. Let's find out what's happening there in Columbus. Kevin Noon joins us, writer and host, BuckeyeHuddle.com. Very popular, very good if you're into Ohio State football, at Kevin_Noon, and we say hi to Kevin. Hi, Kevin. I'll start here. Can you just, let's start with the players. Explain to us Kyle McCord and Devin Brown. Differences, similarities? Why don't we start with the two quarterbacks?
Yeah, I think everybody, when they hear about a quarterback battle, expects them to be completely different, and one guy's a pocket passer and one guy's a dual threat. Both of these guys are pretty similar. There are some differences. Kyle McCord is a year older. He was teammates with Marvin Harrison Jr. in high school. He has one start. He started against Akron in 2021 when C.J. Stroud was nursing a sore shoulder. He is more of your drop-back passer, whereas Devin Brown, who's a year younger, five-star, who split time between Arizona and Utah during the prep ranks, maybe a little bit more of a runner. Is he Lamar Jackson out there running? No, he's not. But he's a little bit more of a runner. But I think if you're an Ohio State fan or just a fan of football in general, everybody remembers C.J. Stroud and the label of him being kind of an unwilling runner. Both of these guys are very capable of running the ball. They both have big arms. They can make all the throws. You know, it's a lot of pressure to put on guys that have one and zero starts. But from what we've seen out of them, I don't really think there are a lot of throws that they can't make. So more similarities than differences.
Kevin, when you look at the two quarterbacks right now, is it a situation where both guys have played great and they can't tell the difference, or neither guy has really performed at an elite level that's been able to separate themselves?
I think it's a level of consistency. I think that 1 week or from practice to practice or maybe even series to series, one guy is a little better than the other one, and then lo and behold, the other guy's a little bit better. But, you know, call me a skeptic. I think that there's something, too, about just trying to keep everybody engaged. And if you shut this thing down 2 months ago, do you potentially run the risk of losing focus of the guy who doesn't get the starting job? I think that it is a good position for Ohio State to be in terms of having two guys that are very capable of being the starter, especially with Ryan Day's track record with first-year quarterbacks at Ohio State. So I don't look at it as, well, nobody was able to just take the job. Nobody was that impressive. I think both were impressive, and it was just a matter of trying to find the consistency and find somebody to just rise up and shut the door on the other guy finally.
Kevin Noone joins us here, Sharp Money, BuckeyeHuddle.com, at Kevin_Noone. So my co-host here, Amal Shaw, is a Buckeye as well. And we were talking earlier about the overall talent on this year's squad. Let's separate the quarterbacks, Kevin, and you fill in the blank. This Ohio State team is how talented?
I think this Ohio State team is very talented. I think the big concerns, and I think any Buckeye fan will be able to sit there and say this, it's going to come down to what the offensive line is going to be able to do with three new starters on the line. I think that it's going to come down to, will this defense be more of the model of what year three Jim Knowles looked like at Oklahoma State versus what year one Jim Knowles looked like at Ohio State or Oklahoma State? Will those explosive plays go down from 3, 4, or 5 a game to 2, 1, or 0? And I think that there's a lot more familiarity within the system. I think you have a team that has a lot of talent coming back. I mean, obviously, there are key departures that we mentioned. You lose C.J. Stroud, who's QB1 at Houston. You lose three linemen who did very well in the NFL preseason. But the pieces are there. And I know that right now, reading a lot of the predictions, have Michigan ahead of Ohio State in terms of the Big Ten. But if you sit there and you get into the analytics and you look at SP Plus and some of these other things, it really likes Ohio State. And I tend to agree with the analytics.
Kevin, let's go to the defensive side of the ball. We know what JT Tuimoloau is capable of doing. Jack Sawyer was also a big-time recruit, not necessarily hasn't lived up to the hype yet. How good can this pass rush be, including guys like Tyleek Williams?
I think it could be really good. I think we're going to see a little bit of a philosophy change. I think it's going to be a little bit more of a, let's stop the run first, and then everything else will sort itself out. People got spoiled through the years with having Bosa, Young all go through the Ohio State defensive line. And when you have three generational players in less than a decade, essentially, there's something to be said about that. So, yeah, I think there are some disappointments that Ohio State has not had more sacks. I think the number was 34 last year, if I recall correctly. But I think that they're going to do a better job of getting to the quarterback. And a name that I would mention right there with Tuimoloau and with Sawyer is keep an eye on Kenyatta Jackson, who has really been coming on. I think he's going to kind of be that third end for Ohio State. And I think that he's going to be somebody we're going to be talking about in a big way come the end of the season.
How good is the wide receiver Harrison Jr.? We've seen so many great wide receivers come through as of late at Ohio State. How good is he, Kevin?
I was just talking about this with some people just the other night, and my days with Ohio State go all the way back to, heck, Joey Galloway. And I've seen some great ones come through, the David Bostons of the world, Michael Thomas. I mean, certainly the crew right now that, you know, goes all the way up to Jackson Smith and Jigba going to Seattle. But Marvin Harrison Jr., I think, is really the rare combination of being just a technician out there running his routes, has a great catch radius, has a great understanding of the game. You go back to the Georgia game and the Peach Bowl, they really had no answer for him whatsoever. I think that he is going to be kind of the standard bearer of what the Ohio State receiver room is, which is kind of crazy when you just look at the recent success that they've had over the last couple of years of putting guys into the National Football League.
Tailback position loaded there. Trevion Henderson, Mayan Williams, Evan Pryor, Dallin Hayden, Chip Traynham. Kind of give us the rotation of the top three here and who's going to get the bulk of the carries potentially on Saturday against Indiana.
I think I would expect to see Trevion Henderson be one and Mayan Williams be two. We had the opportunity to talk to Ryan Day today at the Woody Hayes facility, and that's what it kind of sounded like there. Chip Traynham, let's not forget, he did play running back at Arizona State, came to Ohio State as a linebacker. Injury necessity moved him back to running back. So he's probably your third, and then I would say then it would be maybe Dallin Hayden and then Evan Pryor, who Pryor's really been dealing with injuries since getting to Ohio State after redshirting his first year. But I would probably say, you know, Ohio State really rides the hot hand, but if I had to predict it, I'd say 65-35 in terms of snaps between Trevion Henderson and Mayan Williams.
If I was in Columbus and I talked to Ohio State fans about Ryan Day, what would they say? 45-6, this is year five. He hasn't lost but the two losses to Michigan in consecutive years. What's the conversation about Day?
He better beat Michigan would be the discussion. That's what I hear all the time. And people will be quick to point out that the six losses, when you look at them, they've been against teams that have been equal in talent to Ohio State, and most of those 45 wins have been against teams that Ohio State probably rolls out of bed and is just better than. So there's a division amongst the fans in terms of how they feel about that Michigan series and where it is. Sure, it was great that Ohio State was a 50-yard field goal attempt away from going to the national championship game, and you know, we can play the what-if game. I think Ohio State wins pretty easily against TCU, maybe not to the extent that Georgia did, but I think that Ohio State would have won a national championship last year if they would have made that field goal. But there's still going to be the people who are like, well, that's still not good enough. If that bingo card does not include a win against Michigan, it's all for naught. So I think it's also a little bit of a generational divide. I think there are a lot of young fans that don't remember the lean years against Michigan and have – kind of a skewed perspective of things, but I think all in all, everybody wants to see them get one over on Michigan this year and kind of stop the trend that is not going in the right direction.
I'm old enough to remember John Cooper, that's for sure. So it's been into Jim Tressel, who absolutely dominated Ann Arbor. Wow, what a great job. We needed that. Thank you very much, Kevin. That's exactly anytime. What we needed with the new quarterback there. Again, BuckeyeHuddle.com, Kevin Noon. Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate you.
All right, take care, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, there he goes. Good booking by the big guy. Yeah, John Cooper. And Tressel came in. He was sitting in a gym somewhere, and he said the date.
He goes, in 310 days.
What a buster. Although, did he lose to Michigan?
No, he won. He lost one time to Michigan, 7-1.
It was quite a run. It was quite a run. More NFL news next here, Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
A double dip for Adam Burke. My man is grinding. Of course, we've got the updated, as some say, NFL betting guide coming up on Thursday. Adam Burke was on before us here, Sharp Money, with the week one preview. He and Tim Murray did a great job. Burkey, of course, VSIN betting analyst. You can check out the baseball pods and everything he does over at VSiN.com. As we welcome you back on a Tuesday, I'm Al Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. So the big question after wrapping up the week one preview, did you go home or did you stick around and work for your hour here on Sharp Money?
No, I had a couple of meetings to take, so I just took them downstairs in our VSiN control room down there. So I've been here enjoying the lovely South Point for the last 3 hours, and I got one more to go. So happy to be with you guys.
It's a beautiful room down there. I'm sure you opened a few windows and checked out the plants and all the greenery down there.
Yeah.
I'm just lying. Yep. It's a basement. There are no windows, and you feel like it's the end of the world.
I didn't forget all that. I just want to know, you said greenery. Where is there greenery in this county? I'd love it if there was some.
Yeah, that's true. It is a desert, to be fair to the topography. Okay, why don't we start? Why don't we start where I just mentioned, and that is the NFL betting guide. So I know on Thursday night there was a mad rush; everybody was getting their bets in as far as on-air hosts. But we're going to be dropping on Thursday our updated NFL betting guide again, differently this year because we went with the NFL betting guide early, which is a great job by you and the team. Needed to get out to get the research ahead of time. And then we went college football. From what I hear from my friends in Michigan, the college football betting guide is the best thing that we've ever done. Who knows? Maybe the updated NFL betting guide will take its place. But let's talk about what to expect in the updated NFL betting guide.
Yeah, there are a couple of stragglers in terms of supplying picks from the hosts on air. I won't name names. I won't put anybody
Dustin.
On blast here. But we got pretty much all of those in. We've got updated refresh team previews for everybody too, with Michael Lombardi talking about what he's seen and heard, kind of his observations for the upcoming season. Then also a player to watch, some of them from local beat writers around the country, some of them from Zach Cohen, our other VSiN senior writer, and myself, VSiN managing editor. So we got all kinds of team preview updates. I did a piece on contest strategies. We'll have some Steve Mackinnon data in terms of betting systems for week one, some systems and trends, and also how to use those very popular betting splits that are available over at vsin.com. So that'll be our updated version of the guide. I'm not exactly sure what the page count will be yet, but this is meant to be an add-on to the original guide because this is just an update based on the preseason. Matt Eumanns talked with the bookmakers about more futures liability now that the season is closer. So this is an add-on to the first one, but still only available to VSiN Pro subscribers. And if you're not one, today's the day to sign up.
You mentioned futures. Are you a big futures guy? Because Patrick and I were talking about it a little bit earlier. I think there's some great opportunities in the futures markets because what I found is sometimes there's an over-adjustment on teams that's incorrect, and sometimes the adjustment on teams is very delayed or late.
Yeah, so the tough thing for me about futures is because I handicap basically every major sport here at VSiN, it's hard for me to get into those markets, right? When the college football stuff came out, like DraftKings came out May 20th with their first week and games of the year lines and all that, futures were out around the same time. I'm so busy with baseball that, you know, it's hard for me to dedicate time to having everything ready for the college football season. So I'll play some win totals, but I won't really dive into too many futures, won't tie everything up too much. I'd rather have more of a liquid bankroll for when it's game week because that's when I'm really fully immersed in that sport.
Liquid bankroll. Managing editor. Here comes the smart
guy. It's a great
guy,
band name,
Adam
right?
Burke.
Liquid Bankroll?
it is. I feel like they would sing death metal. Okay, at Skating Tripods on Twitter, Adam Burke. Okay, I just want to do a couple of things with baseball, and then I promise the rest of the hour, John Goulet, will be football. Can we at least take a second, the four of us, to tip our hats to Julio Rodriguez and the Seattle Mariners? The torrid August continues. I mean, it's unbelievable. 7-0, 7-0 last night. I think they're playing the A's. Four more hits for Julio Rodriguez, two home runs and a double. Seattle won their fourth straight. They've won 12 of 13, 20 wins in August, which ties a record for them. Rodriguez, a 13 game hitting streak. He's homered in three straight. He's got 153 hits. That's the most in the AL. Batting 516 over 13 games, 32 for 62, five home runs, six doubles, 21 ribbies. Like, this is crazy, Adam, not just what Rodriguez is doing, but what Seattle's done after the trade deadline. Excuse me, I'd say all-star break. They've just been a juggernaut.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, this is what I expected from this team for the season. I bet over 87.5 wins, which I thought was dead and buried, and it appears now. I mean, they're trending towards going over that number and possibly clearing it by a pretty decent margin, which I'm very excited about. I mean, they got two more games left against Oakland. They should be able to keep this train rolling. Then they go on the road. They play New York, Cincinnati, and Tampa Bay. Long 10-game road trip for them, the Mets, not the Yankees. So, you know, look, Cincinnati's struggling. They've got some injuries. The Mets are, they've checked out on the season. They don't care anymore. So Seattle has got a good chance to keep this thing rolling. The most interesting thing about Seattle, and I'm really curious to see what happens as we go into the final 2 weeks, their last 10 games at Texas, Houston at home, Texas at home for four. So that's probably going to end up deciding this division. So, you know, I don't know if it's wise to invest in the futures market right now when, you know, we'll see what happens when these two teams actually get to play each other, or these three teams get to play each other over the final 10 days of the regular season.
Yeah, that race out west, guys, now one game lead for the M's is going to be the most intriguing one, in my opinion, down the stretch. I know Baltimore-Tampa's pretty good, but you got three teams here competing. Adam, who do you pick right now? 131 games played for Seattle. Your season win total at 87. They got to go 12-19. But who would you pick to win the division?
Well, I mean, I still think that Houston's got a good shot. I mean, Houston's got San Diego left on the schedule. They've got Oakland left. They play six games against Kansas City. They finish up with Arizona, who, of course, you know, could very well be playing for the NL wildcard spot. But I can't get away from Houston at this point in time still. And in full disclosure, I've had periods of time where I've thought this is Texas's division. So Seattle's playing the best right now. The thing that concerns me about Seattle going forward is you do still have a young rotation, right? So what do you get out of Bryce Wu the rest of the way? What do you get out of, you know, Bryce Miller the rest of the way? What do you get out of, you know, Logan Gilbert and George Kirby as the innings really start to mount? You know, there's a lot of things for the Mariners right now where, you know, they're kind of in a tenuous spot with some of those young arms that they have. Houston, their rotation is kind of a mess right now. Christian Javier has been bad. Hunter Brown hasn't been very good. And for Texas, their bullpen has completely collapsed of late, and their offense isn't swinging it as well. So all three of these teams have flaws, and I hate to do this, Amal, but honestly, I don't know if I could pick who the winner is going to be in that division at this point in time.
Trivia time for the three of you. First person that chimes in wins. Julio Rodriguez, his past 10 games, has 28 hits. That's the most by a player over a 10-game span since 1997. The player in 97 was?
Juan Gonzalez?
You're done, big guy. Get the hell out of here. The two of you are left on the island. Berkey, you should get this. This guy played on your team.
Oh.
I was going to say, not Robbie Alomar, but...
You're done.
Manny Ramirez?
Get the hell out of here. Who even invited you back?
No, not 97. He wasn't on the...
97.
Now, this guy may have, and Dustin's good with this memory, he may have had a crazy hitting streak this year as well. So again, just to reiterate, past 10 games, what? Julio Rodriguez has 28 hits. That's the most over a 10-game span since this guy in 97. What did I say?
You said he may have had a long hitting streak this year.
No. I'm sorry. In 97, this guy, I feel like he put together a long hitting streak as well to kind of give you guys another clue. Okay.
Omar Vizquel?
That's not bad. Kenny Lofton.
That was the only other one.
Guess, yeah. Yeah, right. Well,
didn't he have like a, I thought Kenny Lofton put together a crazy hitting streak.
I think it was like 28 to 31 games, somewhere in that range.
It may have been. By the way, just to
see, the thing
about
it was
Julio,
like Kenny didn't play for Cleveland in 97, which is why I didn't really think about it. Cause that was the Marquise Grissom year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my bad. Only player since 1900, by the way, Julio Rodriguez with 5 4 hit games over a 10 game span. I'm just saying he's good. Now to close out the baseball, Ronald Acuna Jr. You guys saw this, right? Coors Field. He was confronted by two fans. One dude ran up, wanted to take a selfie. He looked like Dustin. I thought it was Sweetelson in Colorado. He wanted to take a selfie and then security got him. Another dude comes in and kind of knocked Acuna Jr. to the ground. Acuna Jr., he was fine. He was smiling. He said it was a little scary. But in the game, he was great. He's now batting .335, 29 bombs, 79 RBIs, and 61 stolen bases. However, the interesting thing here, Mr. Burke, is he's $1.35, your MVP in the NL. Here comes Mookie Betts at even money.
Yeah, I mean, look, Mookie Betts has been ridiculously hot over the last little while, of course. And, you know, that interesting little trip back to Boston where, you know, the big homecoming and all that. Look, I mean, it's just that Dodgers team is really stacked. I mean, their lineup looks absolutely tremendous the rest of the way. The pitching is going to be the question for them. But, I mean, to me, it's still Acuna's award to lose. I mean, I think at this point, all it's kind of doing is making Acuna's price better. So, I mean, minus 135, unless he were to get hurt, and hopefully he doesn't, it's still his award.
Yeah, I think, Patrick, he's going to wind up around 35, 60. I don't think he gets to 40 homers, but he's had a fantastic season. And, guys, for me, it really comes down to the series this weekend. They have a four-game set in Los Angeles between the Braves and the Dodgers. If somehow the Dodgers end up surpassing Atlanta to get the best record in the National League, then I think there might be a case to be made for Mookie Betts. But overall, Mookie's still 23 points behind Acuna in terms of batting average. You look at every stat, run scored, hits, stolen bases. I mean, Ronald Acuna Jr. is just right there in everything.
Dustin, you are Mr. Future, Anything on this one for you as far as the NL?
Yeah, I'm going to have to get into it because I regretted telling them all that I thought it was a lock at minus 135 a couple months ago. Acuña was going to win the award. If they're going to shorten it up and do this, I get Betts has been great, but the whole season has to matter here. And Acuña's season will go down in the history books as one of the great all-time seasons we've ever seen. I don't care if the new stolen base, you know, the rules are being impacting on the stolen bases being up. Like, it's going to go down as one of the greatest seasons we've ever seen in our lifetime, and that matters in baseball.
By the way, Patrick, the award is not announced until November 17th.
Really? I didn't realize it was that deep. My gosh. Okay, Dustin, just a quick thing. That wasn't you at Coors, yes?
I'm not going to confirm or deny.
It was a crazy weekend. You never know. All right, we return Berkey in week one.